Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Trend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into the first news story of the day, and this came out just a couple of hours ago. But it appears that Jacob Zuma's MK party has just fired around a third of its MPs without any obvious explanation. So in a letter sent to the Secretary of Parliament, the MK party has said that, I believe it's due to the suspension of membership or something like that, that 20 of its currently serving MPs are to be removed from Parliament and replaced with other MK members. Now, it's still developing in terms of details exactly is going on here. One anonymous MK MP who was apparently fired, who was talked to by the media, said that this was all to do with the Secretary General of the MK party, who was replacing an opposing faction with loyalists to him, and that Jacob Zuma had nothing to do with this and promised to fight it in some way. But basically, it just seems like total chaos. And Herman, this is not the first time we've seen complete chaos inside the MK party. They've also fired, hired again, their Secretary General a number of times in the past couple of months. Doesn't seem like all is going too well inside Zuma's party.
No, and I must say, about a year ago, when we started talking about, you know, this emergence of MK, and then a few months ago, ahead of the election, after the MK's launch in December, one of the reasons I was skeptical about MK's chances in the May elections was just the infrastructure and the logistics, the boring, mundane stuff about politics that makes you a successful party. It didn't seem to me that MK had that down. And then they surprised us all, blew away the election campaign, stormed to 14% of the vote. But it's different managing a political party amidst the sort of hustle, bustle, thrill ride, adrenaline rush, full-scale warfare, panic footing of an election versus afterwards. Between elections, party management becomes something of a getting the basics, boring stuff right. Do you have enough pens at that gazebo table for the registration to happen? Do you have enough water bottles? Is there a table at the table? Is there a gazebo where it should be? So we are now returning to that place where it seems to be that MK's real weakness is in its just its basic stability as a political organization. It itself is a breakaway faction from the ANC's factional warfare. Now to have factions within factions without the necessary party structures like Luthuli House, or even that sort of institutionalization, the party really is very vulnerable to just these weird and unexpected changes and instability that could threaten it as a political vehicle for the longer term. As someone who thinks MK is a dangerous party, you sort of think they represent some of the worst political ideas that one we could have in the country, I'm positive about this. I'm excited. MK's collapse is something that, you know, it. I wouldn't feel sorry for them or Jacob Zuma. And it really comes down to the question about what is this party about? What is its structures? Can it do the boring stuff right? And this isn't a good start. It's this sort of infighting that killed Cope.
Exactly right. So let's for a second put aside the question of, you know, what it means for a party to collapse. Let's just assume that MK just disappeared from the ballot in the next national election. Where do those votes go? And I think that is a very important question about South African politics leading into the future. Do they go back to the ANC? Do they go to the IFP? Do they go to MK to the EFF? Do they go to a variety of parties? So some to the EFF, maybe some to the IFP, maybe some to the ANC, maybe some to the DA. Who knows? What's your thoughts on that question?
Well, it is the million rand question in a way. But to me, it seems to boil down to the fact that these are voters that turned away from the ANC. Now, we must understand that for ANC voters, in South Africa to stop voting ANC is a huge commitment. It is a changing commitment. It is a cultural change. The ANC isn't just a political party. It is a cultural organization that carries a lot of history and legacy within it. So for people to turn away from it and to vote for another party is a big step. Now, we might soften that step by saying, you know, they were still voting for Zuma, and Zuma could say, I am actually the ANC. I'm sort of the ANC outside the ANC. Vote for me so that I can make the ANC what it was. But I think an emotional line has been crossed for many of those voters. They have cast votes for a party that is not the ANC. I think some of that vote goes back to the ANC. There will be some loyalty there. But I think it really is up to the EFF and the IFP, and possibly even the NFP, to fight for what happens to this chunk of almost 50% of the vote in KwaZulu-Natal that is up for grabs. And I think based on the party's histories, the EFF is probably the one who's going to be best at mobilizing there, because the IFP might be the natural inheritor of the quote-unquote Zulu vote, but the party has never proved itself to be terribly dynamic or adept, or able to adapt quickly to changing political circumstances. So EFF would be well placed to gather up these votes. The ANC might recover some of those votes, but between now and the next election, a weak MK is I think good news for the country. That of course changes if that reinforces some of the more sinister political parties going into 2029.
I think it also creates an opportunity for a new sort of MK-like-ish party to emerge from the corpse of MK and perhaps, you know, sort of set up itself as a regional party in some parts of KZN, you know, and then the rest of its vote sort of gets split kind of amongst most of the other parties. But yeah, interesting thing to follow. Obviously, MK is not out yet, but this is not a good sign. And with so much of the party based around Jacob Zuma's personality and personal brand, and him being a rather old man, this is not exactly a plan for the future. Okay, let us go on to talk about our next story. And this is our colleague and regular podcast guest, Makone Maja, has written to the South African Human Rights Commission to ask them precisely what they mean when they use racial classifications. Of course, South Africa has this very dark history of draconian and awful racial classifications. But those were removed at the beginning of democracy from law, leaving us with the question of when laws refer to white people or black people, what do they mean? How is race defined? These are the questions that Makone asked of the South African Human Rights Commission when she wrote to them as part of a larger campaign that we are running against the use of racial classification in law. And of course, I think as one would expect from the South African Human Rights Commission, she did not receive a response. Herman, what do you make of this?
I think it's exactly the right argument to make. And it's quite, I mean, it's very basic, but it's also sort of esoteric in a way. But it boils down to the fact that under apartheid, the Population Registration Act created this huge bureaucracy of classification authorities and classification boards and formulas for when someone was white or when someone was black, how many of this, you know, lineage of theirs was colored or black or European in the apartheid jargon. There was a whole system, as perverted as the system was, as ridiculous as it was, as convoluted and evil as it was. The apartheid government at least got racial classification in onto the statute books with something near enough, you know, a perverse logic to it. That all went when the Population Registration Act was repealed in 1991, meaning that if the government says, I want to help black people, it no longer has the criteria or the mechanism that the apartheid government had to say, this is a black person, that is a white person. And that's something of a sort of a big vacuum at the heart of the whole idea of racial classification, because we've just been assuming that race can be classified quite simply by the government and sort of it. But at the heart of it, we either return to pencil tests where we say a black person is someone with these characteristics, and a white person is someone with these characteristics, we either go back to that, get back to race classification boards, or we commit to non-racialism, at least from the state's perspective, saying, I am going to fulfill my constitutional obligation, whether I'm a government entity or a Chapter 9 entity, I'm going to fulfill my constitutional obligation to be non-racial. So all strength to McCorney and our colleagues there at, in the campaigns team. This is a door to bash down. It is made of paper and it is held up by straw.
Exactly right. These laws don't make any sense and they don't help anyone. All right, let us move on to our last one. And this is a curious little detail which perhaps says something about Botswana politics. So Botswana has been pretty much dominated by one political party since independence. And recently, it seems to have taken a bit of a populist turn, at least in some of its economics. It has banned vegetable imports from South Africa. And now, from the 17th of June, effective to the 31st of August of this year, Botswana has banned the import of South African oranges. Well, it sort of seems a bit strange. You know, countries change trade rules all the time, that sort of thing. But Herman, you and I were chatting before the show, and we suggest that this might be a desperate attempt to try and win back some support, which the ruling party in Botswana seems to be bleeding. What do you make of this?
Yeah. So the BDP, the Botswana Democratic Party, has been in power in Botswana since the first democratic elections were held there in 1965. And except for 2014, they've won a majority of the vote every single time, gaining 52.7% of the vote in 2019. Now they are scheduled for another round of elections this year, must happen before the end of October. And the BDP seem to be under pressure. The one opinion poll that's been carried out there seems to put them well below the 50% mark that they had, on 22.3%. Now, that is dating from July, August 2022. That is some time ago. But the BDP
is the only publicly available poll that we have. So
yes,
who knows what the final one is. Botswana is, as you can imagine, not a well-polled place.
Yes, no, I mean, in a country where you literally have more donkeys than citizens, it's a tough gig to do polling. But the BDP have been a right-of-center party for its entire existence. In fact, in 2019, the current president, President Masisi, said this: the government in and of itself does not really create jobs. It is my desire to grow the public it is not my desire to grow the public service any bigger. If anything, it is my desire to trim the civil service so we are more efficient, we are leaner, meaner, and can do business, and we are more attractive to the private sector for them to invest. This is just 6 years ago, from the same president who's now leading a government saying, no, no vegetables, no oranges from South Africa. That's an about turn, and it's something quite populist, because in the marketing or the communication around this decision, it is promoted to support Botswana agriculture and local production. And that is very Trumpian. That is very trade barrier-y. That is very much in the belief that in global trade, international trade is a zero-sum game. You either win or you lose. And the way to protect your people is to make sure that your people must buy from your people whatever they want to buy. And that sounds fine, but it does put up prices. There's this trade-off where you get control of your trade, but you also punish your consumer, because now they can't buy oranges that are produced at a lower cost in Zimbabwe or South Africa or whatever. So it is a turn from the economic right, from a president that lifted a ban on elephant trophy hunting because it was anti-free market, and because the way the government saw it at the time was that if you want to protect natural resource, you make it an economic asset worth protecting within an economic system. From that to a protectionist vibe where it's sort of just, you know, let's protect our borders, let's look after our people, it does sound like a party that is either undergoing something of an identity crisis or a party that is panicking a few months out from an election that it seems you might actually not end so well for the party.
Exactly right. And it does seem as though there is a little bit of a trend that might be beginning in this part of the world, that long-standing liberation parties are not doing so hot when it comes to election time. So we'll have to see if South Africa's condition is contagious. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today, and we will see you soon on The Daily Friend Show next week. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.